I have the honor of chatting with some Farmers Alley Theater cast members and the executive director of Farmers Alley, our deputy director. Is that right, Rob?
Very important person.
Very VIP.
Yes.
So let me get this right. I have Rob Weiner, the deputy director of Farmers Alley Theater, and two cast members of It Should Have Been You, which opens next week. I'm so pleased to welcome DJ Bocciarelli and Zoe Vanderhaar here to WMUK. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you. It's our pleasure.
Rob, I'm going to start with you. As usual, we need to catch up on the exciting season that has been trucking along here and continues all the way through July, August.
Right, yeah. We are so excited for our two summer shows. They're two comedies, and the first one, of course, is what we'll be speaking about today. It's the hilarious wedding farce, It Should Have Been You. It premiered on Broadway just a couple seasons ago, and I believe we're the first theater company in the state of Michigan to produce it. So we're thrilled about that. Obviously, we'll continue talking about that. And then in July and August, we're doing the prequel to Peter Pan that won all the Tony Awards when it was on Broadway, called Peter and the Star Catcher. I saw it when it came through the tour at Miller Auditorium and loved it. And we're so thrilled. Director Stephen Brodebeck, who's a Western Michigan alum, he's returning. He's helmed our productions of Spamalot last summer, as well as the Irving Berlin musical, I Love a Piano, and the Canner and Ebb Review, and The World Goes Round. So he's one of our favorite directors, and we're so thrilled that he's coming back, because Stephen actually worked as an associate director on the Broadway version of Peter and the Star Catcher. So there's no better person to bring that to life for us. And that runs July 21st through August 6th. And we're still over at the Little Theater on Oakland Drive on Western's campus due to the construction that I'm sure Zoe can talk about that's happening right outside her door in the apartment above our downtown theater on Farmers Alley. But we're very excited because our next season, which is going to be our 10th in the fall, we're going to be utilizing both the Little Theater at Oakland Drive and our original intimate black box space downtown. The construction will be clear, I think, knock on wood. And right to the city if it's not. So we're excited about using both spaces next year for larger shows at the Little Theater, and then some of our smaller, more intimate stuff and more intense down at Farmers Alley. So it's really going to be a win-win situation for us.
And here on WMUK, you'll keep coming back and chatting about all of this.
I will come as often as you'll have me, Carol. You've been a wonderful champion for us, and so thank you so much for having us again.
We're lucky to have a Farmers Alley Theater in our community here in Kalamazoo. So It Should Have Been You.
Right.
You timed this rather perfectly for the beginning of wedding season.
I mean, absolutely. You know, wedding summer is the time for weddings. You know, the cast has been talking about their fond memories of either their own weddings or friends' weddings. So we've been really getting all the gossip and the stories, but none are quite as interesting and fun as what we're putting on starting June 9th in the musical It Should Have Been You. First of all, it is hysterical. It's a farce. You can tell as soon as you walk in the theater, because the rule of farce is you got to count how many doors are on the stage. And I believe there's like 9 or 11 different entrance points on the stage. And, you know, the cast is, you know, we got to mark each door. This is the hallway door. This is the bathroom door. This is the closet. You know, there's all these different doors. And so you can tell right away when you see the set that it's going to be a lot of fun.
Now, there's a clue. Bathrooms and closets.
Yeah, bathrooms and closets.
A lot of doors.
But what's interesting, and I think really the audiences will really enjoy, because a lot of farces are silly and they're not really necessarily based in reality. But this show, I think if you come and see it, you're going to see yourself in at least one of the characters on stage at some point, whether you're a mother or a father, whether you're a son or a daughter or a friend. You know, you have been in this family situation, and it's sort of this classic, you know, story of warring families. You've got the bride and her Jewish family and the groom and her Catholic family, and will they ever come together and learn to get along? But there's a lot of twists and turns along the way. You know, a lot of stories sometimes have a love triangle. I would say, like, this show has, like, a love octagon. There's so many different relationships, past and present, that these characters have, which leads to the fun. And sort of in the center of it all is the relationship that the bride and her sister and her mother have. And the older sister, Jenny, is the co-maid of honor. She's older, she's single, she's overweight, and she takes a lot of the brunt of the heat from her mother on her sister's wedding day. So how that relationship works out, and it's very real, and I think really wonderful to see represented on stage, because it's not something you see oftentimes. But beyond that, I mean, it's just a lot of fun. Great numbers. We have an amazingly talented ensemble cast of 13, and everyone gets their moment to shine. And it's just really been a lot of fun to put together.
It sounds like whoever wrote this piece was trying to maybe outdo all of the farces that came before.
Possibly. You know, the writer of the book, Brian Hargrove, his husband is the director of the show and very famous David Hyde Pierce, who was, of course, Niles on Frasier and has won Tony Awards on Broadway as well. So David Hyde Pierce directed it, and there was Broadway royalty in the show when it was, you know, in New York, Tyne Daly, Harriet Harris, Sierra Bodges, Lisa Howard, David Burtka, Chip Zion. I mean, if you're theater people, you know this was an insanely talented group, and we've tried to replicate that here in Kalamazoo in our own little way, and I think we're succeeding.
The show opens next
Yeah, we open next Friday, June the 9th, and we run for three solid weekends over at the Little Theater on Oakland Drive. You know, we had initially planned on having it downtown, but now seeing the set, I'm not sure how we could have fit all those doors in our little space down there. They've been rehearsing there, and now they've just switched over to the Little Theater, so we're anxious to have audiences come. My wife, Whitney, is in the show as well, and she comes home and talks about how they're just cracking up, you know, these lines that they've done, you know, dozens of times by now and will do for hundreds of times by the end of the show, and still making each other laugh. And that's really key when it comes to comedy, keeping it fresh and making sure that everyone is in the moment sort of for the first time and it doesn't feel, you know, stale.
Well, in the cast, playing the ex of the young bride is your character's name is Marty, DJ Butcherelli. This is not your first time in a Farmer's Alley Theater production.
No, I'm back for a second time.
Before you gave an incredible performance as is it Dickon in Secret Garden? So I'm so glad that you're back in Kalamazoo.
Thank you. I'm glad that you came to see that.
Did you have a good experience that first time?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, Kalamazoo is amazing. So, I mean, Farmer's Alley, first of all, is like a little like unicorn on its own because you work everywhere around this country and you go to these places and very rarely is it so familial. Like, you don't get to, like, I just had birthday dinner at, you know, our director, Kathy Mulay, had birthday dinner at her house. You know, you don't do that at places. And so, like, immediately coming for Secret Garden, I went, oh, these are, like, friends, and this can be kind of a family. And then on top of it, you get to do a show like Secret Garden, which is never done anywhere. So, and we did it, you know, at the smaller space, you know, down in Farmer's Alley, and, you know, doing a massive musical in, like, a 100-seat black box has its own, like, really beautiful charm. You know, this epic show, but so intimate.
Yeah, it was one of the most intimate things I'd seen because, the emotions are big in the show, but you're right feeling them. We all had a hard time keeping it together.
I know. Well, and it was a family affair because you had, artistic director Jeremy Koch as Archibald, his wife Deneen as Lily, their son Jason as Colin. So Deneen's mother, Kathy Mulay, Kalamazoo celebrity, Kathy Mulay, as director, her husband, John, played the groundskeeper. Like, it was just everybody, the whole family.
Right.
So, you know, and you have them actually falling in love, and they really are in love and really married. So everyone's, like, sniffling by the end.
That was a real, real special performance.
Very
just
personal.
Because of that. You know, Jeremy and Deneen do a lot of stuff, but the fact that it was Jason, their son, playing Colin, he's such a talented young man. He's just entering high school in the fall, and so they've really passed along the genes there. But we
and
knew
Maddie
that
Hertel.
Oh, yeah. Our young Mary, she was insane.
Insane.
Yeah.
Did you also begin as a young performer?
No. Oh my God, no. I come from a musical family. Okay. So like my grandfather always had this really beautiful tenor voice. My mom's got a great voice. My dad thinks he has a great voice. No, I was like, I went to like, you know, regular, you know, public high school, and I was like, I act. I'm only an actor. I don't sing. And I had all these like friends that were like, come on, do this school musical with us. And I was like, no, only Shakespeare for me. But I really didn't start till literally sophomore year of high school. I had this like choir teacher, and we were doing A Whole New World, you know, Aladdin.
Yeah.
And I remember I was like probably singing out way more than I should have. I know, shocking. And he took me aside and he was like, I think you should take voice lessons. But that was not until I was like maybe 14 or 15 years old. And yeah, that's kind of when it all began, because I was like, until then I was like, no, I only do straight theater. You know, from like sixth grade to 10th grade, I was a very serious actor. And then that's when the musical bug kind of hit. But no, my parents were like, they stood back. No Mama Roses in my family.
After that, you had to start pursuing life as in music theater.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Audition, audition, audition. But you've had some great opportunities.
Yeah.
Along the way. One of the things that stood out in your biography was a production of Jesus Christ Superstar. And that was a touring edition, right? With Ted Neely?
Oh, yeah.
Who was, isn't he on the cast album?
He was the Jesus from the movie in 1973, I think it is, or 75. And he's still doing it.
Holy cow.
He was 67 when we started touring, and I toured for just over a year or so with that. I was not a swing, but I understudied so many roles. I was basically a swing, and I was a really terrible swing. Because, like, the leper scene, everybody has one line, and I would never remember where I was supposed to stand and what one line. So I would just kind of garble a word and run away as fast as possible. And then, Ted would, because I would get yelled at all the time from stage management and be like, DJ, you can't. Because everyone would be like, see my purse, I'm a poor, poor man. And I would go, And Ted, because he would stick up for me, because I was like this like young, like I gave him like doe eyes, like Bambi, being like, I'm so sorry. And he'd go, well, you know, you're a leper. You can't say things. Your tongue is gone. And, and he would like justify all of my screw-ups for me. Oh. And I mean, they would play practical jokes on me too, because I was one of the youngest members of the cast. So like the first time I went on for Annis, the main like priest, one of them, we had these staffs that we'd walk on very dramatically, and they rubbed like hand lotion all over the staff. So my very first entrance was a face plant.
Oh no.
Yeah. So we had a good time.
You're giving me some great ideas.
Oh no.
Scamps. My goodness.
I do ride a scooter, and it should have been you, and I think Zoe's getting some ideas.
You could loosen those wheels.
Well, last but certainly not least, let's bring Zoe into the conversation.
Good morning.
Good morning. You have a powerhouse of a role here.
I do. Judy is the mother of both the bride and the maid of honor. It's a fabulous role. Well, first of all, I love Tyne Daly, so just it's an honor to play something that she created. But it's a very heartwarming role to me. She's a big mouth Jewish mother, and she calls it like she sees him. All right, I'm going to quote one of my lines. Everything she says is out of love. You know, she's not mean-spirited. So I think that's the joy in this role is being able to identify with her, that a mother who just says what she thinks and doesn't mean to hurt, but she does, you know, and I'm sure we can all relate to somebody like that in our life.
And in some ways, though, it's a good thing, because you always know when you know where a person is coming from all the time, you can trust that person.
Exactly. And I'm kind of like that. I have a big mouth, and I might have a small filter, but I say what I think, and I don't hold any grudges. I say it. It's out there, and you always know how I feel or stand, and, you know, then you can yell at me or cry and run away. I don't know.
And now you've had quite a long performance career, from playing ingenues all the way to this mother-in-law.
I have been very blessed. But I do have to say, I haven't played very many ingenues. I sort of have the opposite storyline of DJ, where I started dancing school when I was 3. My father was a musician and a singer, so always sang. My family, we had to sing 3-part harmony instead of telling jokes at Halloween. That was a little mortifying, but it's just always been in our family. And I never really did straight plays. And I remember the first time I got cast in a serious play, I was mortified about not having a song or a dance to fall back on. If your scene doesn't go well, you know, it's like, well, I can get them with my song. But I didn't have a song. So senior year of high school, I auditioned for Fiddler on the Roof, and I wanted to be the dancing daughter or Golda the mother, and I was cast as Yenta, and I was mortified. I thought, first of all, I must have had a horrible audition, or I can't sing or dance. And I had a fabulous director and teacher who taught me the joy of the character actor, as I've been playing old ladies since high school, apparently. but just about the puzzle pieces fitting in, yes, you could have played those roles, but we couldn't find anybody else that we liked, you know, in this comedic role. Well, semi-comedic. So it was fun learning that. And so, yeah, mostly old ladies.
Is it also about, is it about voice type as well?
Well,
a lot of ingenues have that very pretty, but maybe thin sort of soprano.
Right. I have a loud, deeper voice. I did sing some soprano roles in high school that now I'm looking back and go, I don't know how I sang those, because I'm kind of a Kathleen Turner kind of person down here. I kind of sing bass these days. But I also am very blessed to have learned from some great comedians. And I think I'm pretty good in the comedic timing. And
she's really good at the comedic timing.
It's fun to do those kind of roles, and it's fun to play a comedic role that is also very meaty and loving and heartwarming, instead of just the prankster, you know, or the one-liners. Although I do have a lot of one-liners. I put a lot of buttons on things in this show.
Is this the most important role in this farce, possibly?
You know what? It really is there is no one particular person. It is clearly an ensemble piece. It's a big role, but it's really an ensemble piece, and there's so many pieces to the puzzle that you kind of need them all.
Well, who would like to introduce the title song of It Should Have Been You? Here's Rob.
Sure, I can speak to that. This is the title song called It Should Have Been You. And what happens is the maid of honor, Jenny, mistakenly calls DJ's character, Marty, who's the ex-boyfriend of the bride. And so he shows up to the wedding, and these Jewish parents descend upon him with the fervor you haven't seen, and saying, it should be you who gets married to our daughter, not this Gentile, you know, humorless boy that she's ended up betrothed to. So first in the song, the bride's father sings, and then the mother, and then the bride's aunt and uncle join in as well, and they're all singing to Marty how he should be the one who marries their daughter, not Brian, her intended.
It should have been you.
What?
It should have been you. Right, somebody I like who makes me laugh should take my daughter for a wife. It shouldn't be him. I swear the guy can't tell a joke to save his life. He speaks Yiddish like he learned it from a nun. When he says so new, if I had a gun, it should have been you.
Murray, the girls have disappeared.
Ah, so go find them. I'm having a minute here with Marty.
Your minute's up. Hello, Marty.
It's not what I had planned.
We know you, Rebecca.
Might not
respond.
Understand.
Come on now, let's not get out of hand.
Hold it, just stop.
Can any of you even hear yourselves?
I certainly can't.
Marty, you don't know what you put us through. It could've, it would've, it should've been.
We're diving into It Should Have Been You, which is to be staged as of next week. The opening night is next Friday at Farmers Alley Theater, which is actually the hall itself is the Little Theater, right, Rob? And details are at farmersalleytheater.com, spell theater with an R-E, and you'll be right there.
Exactly, the right way.
Well, you said something about how relatable some of these themes are, Rob, and somewhat interested persons in someone else's relationship often have this issue. It should have been someone else, or, you know, wanting.
Everyone thinks they know best for everybody else.
Yeah.
You know, and especially nowadays when it seems like we're all up in each other's business all the time, usually self-inflicted because we're posting on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. So everyone knows what everyone's doing all the time. So, but I mean, it certainly is a cultural thing. I mean, I have a Jewish mother and a grandmother. I don't think my mom was not like Judy, but my grandmother I could see possibly was. But there's also the other side as well. And we haven't even talked about the wedding planner who sort of is the, you know, wizard of it all, who manages to keep everything safe and on schedule. And he does work his magic. And we're so thrilled at Farmers Alley Theater because that role is being played by Ben Zillman, who, of course, is a local favorite, very talented actor and director in his own right.
Beloved is not too strong a word.
Absolutely not. I've known Ben since I was a child. He and my mother were at the Kalamazoo Civic doing Brighton Beach Memoirs together. She played Kate and he was her son, Stanley, even though they were like maybe like 7 years apart in age or something like that. But, you know, he's got such, even still, he looks so young. He plays sort of the wedding planner, kind of reminiscent of Martin Short and Father of the Bride, a little eccentric like that as well, but a real fun comedic role for Ben, and an amazing talented cast of other locals that your audiences are probably familiar with. Hal Hobson is playing the father of the groom. Gina Maria Chimner plays the bawdy cougar Aunt Sheila. let's see, we've got a number of Western students, or recent graduates actually, Kendall Van Amberg, Keani Truvillian, and Mike Perlongo. My wife, Whitney Weiner, is playing Jenny, the older sister. Rich Madelung plays Uncle Morty. And then we have such fabulous out-of-town talent. And that's really the joy of Farmers Alley Theater, the ability to cultivate what a strong community of artists we have here in West Michigan, and then bring in folks from New York or Chicago or St. Louis. And they really come in, and I mean, I don't want to speak for them, but most of the artists are like, wow, Kalamazoo is so rich and artistic. We didn't know this was here between Chicago and Detroit. And we're just thrilled. So besides Zoe and DJ, who we're so thrilled to have, we also have Lori Carter-Rose, who's playing the mother of the groom, Steve Silver, who's playing Murray, Zoe's husband, and Missy Carley, who's playing the bride. And she has this incredible voice. Sometimes we're working in the office and they're rehearsing in the green room, which is right next door, and we hear Missy singing. We're like, is that the recording? No, that's just Missy, and she's incredibly talented. So, like Zoe said, it is an ensemble cast, and I really applaud Jeremy, our artistic director, for putting all these fabulous pieces together.
You and I have talked pretty much all season about how theater is so unique in allowing people to share the same experience all together. Strangers, but also groups. And I'm wondering if bachelorette parties might have a good time at this
gone to some of the businesses around the town who might be interested in working with us. This is the perfect girls' night, but it's also a great date night as well. And it's so much fun. I don't want to give away anything, but it certainly is something that I don't care who you are, you're going to enjoy it. So it has that mass appeal, yeah. I think, and sort of like a very witty episode of Modern Family almost. And you can sort of tell by the lyrics in that last song as well.
Well, with farces, everything gets tangled up and so confused, and things are look like they're never going to work out, but generally you can count on a pretty happy ending with these things.
Yes, for a musical comedy, I would say, I don't think I'm giving anything away by saying that it sort of ends with a nice little bow, which is usually how it goes in these farces.
Zoe, DJ and Rob were both talking about comic timing and how you have it and can apply it well. I'm wondering about how you feel about that part of your performance arsenal. Like, what is it, just something innate, or did you, is it something you can really can deploy when necessary? Do you have a really,
well, part of it I think clearly comes from my smart aleck personality. I kind of like doing one-liners in real life, but early in my career, I worked on the Goldenrod Showboat, which was a real showboat that was on the Mississippi River, and it is just now being, like, torn apart because it just didn't make it through all the floods and economics and all that. But it it was a real showboat. It was a dinner theater where we did melodramas and olios. So, you know, the olio being do a song and dance, and then there's three jokes and you do a song and dance. So it was all that old vaudeville kind of stuff. And I learned from some very talented comedians that worked on there. So I have to give a lot of credit to that.
That's a true link to America's musical artistic past.
It really is. And there was a lot of history on that boat, and seeing
pictures
and all the all the great actors that were on there, and watching it just decay through mostly through economic times, I think, but the floods on the rivers kind of did it in. It's a sad thing when you see history going away when it's an important part of history.
What would people, how long would you they visit the showboat? Could they stay overnight or
truly just come, you know, for dinner and drinks, and it's mostly dinner and a show, and it was the kind of place where the audience would actively take part at yelling things to actors, so you had to learn how to be quick on your feet, and there, I have to say, there were a lot of drink shots involved with some people, but you really do. You learn a lot about timing and comedy when you work in a venue like that.
Did you end up in New York at some point or the other
coast? I wound up actually getting my equity card with the first international tour of A Chorus Line. So that was like 79 to 81.
Oh, that's a huge show. Wow.
So you're a dancer too.
I am a dancer. You know, I just did theater all my life, and it was kind of a weird thing that I never really thought about making a career out of it. I just always did it. I guess I'd never planned ahead. And then when I saw the tour of A Chorus Line, I think that was the first time I actually stated that, oh, I need to be doing this. You know, I wanted to be in that show so badly. And luckily, I got in. I did for 2 years. It was an incredible experience.
Was that the choreography of Bob Fosse?
Michael Bennett. And I did get to work with him a couple times, which was a little frightening and amazing. Yeah, I'm really, really blessed to have worked with him before he passed.
Did you stay on the New York scene for very long? Or?
I did not. My husband was in the tour for a while. We had an apartment in New York, but we got pregnant on tour, and I just, I'm kind of a homebody. I didn't want to have kids in New York, so that's when I went back to St. Louis.
I think I was reading a site called Quora where people just ask questions, and somebody said, who was the greatest actor of all time or something like that, and the answer was written by an actor, and they said, you know, the true answer is probably somebody on a stage in a community theater in St. Louis who's actually given their life to, you know, a banking or something like that. But it has to do, there are so many unheralded actors.
Oh, absolutely.
Among us.
Absolutely. Everywhere you go, you get to work with incredible actors. Theater is just such a special opportunity. You meet so many wonderful and talented people no matter where you go. You don't have to be in New York to see that.
Where are you living, DJ?
I live in New York.
Oh. I rest my case.
Oh!
See? My one-liners. Oh. They come out. I don't even
Yeah, but I've been in New York. I've always wanted to be a New Yorker. So, because my mom's family grew up in upstate, then lived in Jersey, and then my grandmother's brother lived in Midtown, and we used to always visit every year, and I remember always thinking from like a little boy, like, I'm going to live in New York. So I've lived there full-time since 2008.
That's a good
so
long
almost
time.
Almost 10 years.
Yeah. Maybe if you keep living there, you'll see different iterations of the city. You know, how people talk
oh
about 80s and 90s.
Right. Well, I mean, even where I live, I've lived up in Harlem almost the entire time. And I went from, so I lived across the street from the Hamilton Mansion. So I'm sure everybody listening to this will have heard of Hamilton mm-hmm. by now. But when I lived up there, it was really scary. It's quiet uptown. but it was really scary when I moved up there. And then since, you know, especially since the musical came out 2 years ago, now the big red tour buses come up to 141st Street. And I walked out of my door like a week before I came here and SNL was filming. And like, there's a Starbucks on every corner. Now a bourbon bar opened in my building.
Oh, jeez.
And you're like, wait, whatever happened to like affordable Harlem? So, but
Hamilton.
I'm
happened.
Glad I asked.
But I'm kind of a homebody in New York. I say I'm an A-minus personality. I like to be around a million people. But I like to be the one at home playing cards, but hearing everybody else's party.
I see.
I don't know.
Well, would you introduce this song we're going to hear next?
So in this song, so Marty has finally dashed onto the scene here at the wedding, in which he's not invited. And he's trying to convince Jenny Steinberg, his old friend from childhood, to let him stay and talk to Rebecca, the bride, out of marrying this guy. She shouldn't be marrying him. So Jenny refuses to hear anything, so he decides to go through all of their childhood memories and to convince her why she owes him this favor.
Who did you call when you got in trouble? 'Cause those six jello shots had you seeing double. Who kept you out of jail? Who? Who changed your grade on the math computer 'cause you needed to show off to that recruiter? Who got you into Yale? Who? Who's known you better than anyone since you were... Who popped wheelies with your huffing?
Who was Angel to my Buffy?
Who's the biggest nut you ever... Avenue.
It's gotta be no other heat between us two. It's you know who.
That's a highlight from It Should Have Been You, and we're with the members of the cast, DJ Butcherelli and Zoe Vanderhaar, and the deputy director of Farmers Alley Theater, Rob Weiner. This...
Claire, you gotta stop guessing plot points of the show, okay? So...
Stop guessing plot points?
Right, exactly. And no, I'm just teasing you. But it's like... We're talking about all the twists and turns, and we want, obviously, the audience to be aware and come and see us, but don't do too much research, audience, because you'll spoil. It's like an M. Night Shyamalan movie, but without the little boy that sees dead people.
Yeah. Much funnier.
Yes, and much, much funnier. You know, our director, Kathy Mulay, you know, our artistic committee likes to go to New York from time to time and see as much as we can so we can immerse ourselves and know what's out there. And when she saw this show in New York, she said she left the theater and said, that's the most fun I've ever had seeing a show. And it really is. And it's quick, It's fast-paced. I believe it's just no intermission, you know, and it just keeps going boom, boom, boom. And the momentum builds and builds and builds. And then, like DJ said, there's a twist. And then something else. You think you know what's going on, but then another twist happens. And you think you've got it figured out. And then this character comes in and says something that completely changes everything else that we've thought until this time. So it's just going to be a lot of fun, and I know the Kalamazoo audiences are just going to go over the moon for it.
DJ, could I follow up with you about...
Oh, no. About what?
about your singing partner in that scene, Whitney Weiner, who Whitney, I've seen in several productions. She really is so great. Very, very funny, and somehow never unafraid to be embarrassing in a way. Like, she will...
Oh, she's spectacular.
She will do it.
Oh, yeah. The very first day she went, are we going to Mac it today? because I'm supposed to come and, like, anyway, neither here nor there. I won't give away anything. But she's just so funny that she's, like, everything she says out of her mouth is so hilarious. But seeing her in this show is going to be really cool because she's not necessarily the har-har funny gal. She's very heartfelt, and she'll really make you feel a lot of feelings. She's got all these really tender songs, and, you know, she isn't going to be like a, she was in Trailer Park Here, yeah?
Well, right. Yeah. She comes home. I have some, you know, very special insight into her rehearsal process when she comes home and talks to me about it. But she was nervous because it is, like I said earlier, even though it's such a hysterical farce, there is realness to it. And she's like, I was the Trailer Park musicals. I was, you know, in the Spelling Bee musical. These are all very broad, colorful characters. Right. And now she's got to play this real woman who you see on the street every day. And she's nervous about it. Right. But one thing that she continues to say when she comes home from rehearsal is how wonderful this group of 13 have bonded together, how supportive they all are of each other. And she says, that's the highlight of the show for me, is working with these actors. And it's really something. And she's got this incredible number in the second act that will hopefully, you know, blow the roof off the theater. And I won't say anymore.
Okay.
I won't say anymore.
Okay. Is it just as easy for our rehearsal processes to turn stressful and strife-ridden as it is for people to just continue to bond?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Especially because, you know, we keep saying the show is super funny, very farcical. It's like a romantic comedy, a musical of sorts. But it does get very vulnerable from time to time. And especially, like, even, you know, our one-line, you know, our comedy mom, Judy, she will break your heart with one line. And then, you know, you get to these vulnerable spots. And then, you know, people get, like, vulnerable. And sometimes it can get stressful because you're trying to find the funny after that.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're trying to recreate time and time again these moments. But
and that's the work of it?
Yeah. What is that? Meryl Streep has this great quote where she was doing Mother Courage. I think it was maybe Broadway and Bryant Park or something. And they were filming it. And they were like, how do you feel about us filming your rehearsals? And she goes, well, you can film it all you want, but I'm going to look like I suck. She's like, I'm not going to be a good actor today. She's like, you won't see a good performance until maybe opening night. Because she's like, I'll be trying and trying again, and I'll be fighting with everybody to find the thing that clicks with all of us.
Mm.
And she's like, you won't see any magic for another few weeks, but you can film me.
just know.
So it's kind of like that, you know, everybody's like trying new things. Like, oh God, I keep saying I'm workshopping things, and it keeps getting cut. So like, oh yeah, oh, all the time I'll try something. And Kathy goes, good try. Nope, do it again, cut that. But you know, you gotta try the get the fluff out. Get the like, this was a good idea. Like, I don't know, I came in with champagne glasses in one scene and she was like, why do you have glasses? I was like, I don't know. It's the workshop. It was the out of town version. But you know, everybody's kinda trying things and
Ralph mentioned
going for it.
Going on serious theater watching trips to New York once in a while. Is that something you try to put into your schedule too?
Oh, yeah.
Seeing what others are doing?
Oh, yeah, because sadly, like, Broadway is so commercialized, you know? So unless you're a Hamilton or a Phantom or a Wicked, like, you just don't have staying power. So these really phenomenal plays, like, the first one that comes to mind is a play called Indecent. That it's based on a play that ran in 1923 on Broadway, but got shuttered because the nature of the show at that time was considered indecent.
Mm-hmm.
So it's now running on Broadway again in 2017, and telling the story about how it was created and all that. And they're showing all this light, like, this topic in 1923 was deemed indecent, but actually look at this beautiful story. But it's, you know, it's a play, so when I went to see it, maybe half the house was sold. So, you know, those poor little plays get maybe 3 months out of New York. And then, you know, the big epic musicals last forever. So I try to see those, like, little plays that are so meaningful and so, like, you know, real deep theater.
Right.
You know?
The big musicals will be just fine without your attendance.
Yeah.
or even a show like this when it was in New York, you know, didn't run for, you know, a long time, you know, because it's just, you know, it's this fun, light story, but it's not based on a movie. It didn't have a movie star in the show. Mm-hmm. You know, it didn't have, you know, some... you know, tie in to some other piece of literature past. So it's a new original musical. I know, and it is,
so
you know,
rare.
Rare, but really kind of encouraging this year's Tony Awards, you know, with shows like Dear Evan Hansen and Come From Away and Great Comet. You know, those are all sort of original musicals getting their due. But and then you see all these other shows that are based on movies. You know, you had Groundhog Day and Amelie, and, you know, and those have, you know, mixed success, but they've got, you know, somewhat of a name attached to it that, you know, it really is
Investors,
such a hard business.
Yeah, investors feel more comfortable banking on a known thing. Yeah, well, we could go on for that a long time. But, in fact, there's only 8 minutes left in this hour, and we could tie it up a little bit better. Let me remind listeners that It Should Have Been You starts next Friday. Don't show up this Friday. might be in rehearsal. You might be invited to dinner or something. But the show opens next Friday and continues for 3 weekends. And you can find all the details at FarmersAlleyTheater.com. You can order tickets there.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And I would say, you know, if you're on the computer, make sure you like us on Facebook. We're putting out all this really cool content. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram, all those channels. We've been making these videos and sort of meet the cast videos where people are telling their funny stories about weddings that they were a part of. And I'll just briefly touch upon my wife, Whitney, our wedding, which actually took place at Farmers Alley Theater in our intimate black box. And then we had a reception across the street at the Cityscape events. It was wonderful. And one member of the party got a little overenthusiastic. You may know him. His name is Jeremy Koch. And there's some pretty interesting photos that go along with that video from that evening of Jeremy having a quote unquote good time on the dance floor. So you have to follow us on Facebook to get the full story and to get those pictures as well.
Sometimes the anticipation of an event is even more fun than the event itself, or as fun. So if you do like to get a little information ahead of time, it is fun to follow the theater and read about the actors and how they're preparing to entertain you on the night you're going. So that's all available through Facebook and the website, FarmersAlleyTheater.com. Well, here in the last few minutes, let's find out maybe what you're going to be up to after this production. Where will you be going, DJ?
Oh, directly after this, I go back to New York. But I actually will be working on, I book out a Carole King tribute on cruise ships.
What does book out mean?
So I wrote, well, I didn't write, I commissioned. I have a tribute show for a Carole King music called Carole's Kings, which is the script is written by Second City in Chicago. It's like a forever plaid with Carole King music. And I have a contract with Celebrity Cruise Lines.
That might
so
be the most
starting...
worthy project I've ever heard.
Thank you. Thank you. It just makes
genius.
Me think of like sitting on my mother's rug, listening to So Far Away. And it's really cute. It's 50 minutes. We have a contract starting going out in September on Celebrity Cruise Lines. So
that's terrific.
I'm acting a little bit like a producer and, you know, taking charge of the project. Yeah, and I hired a few friends, and that's what I'll be working on this summer. We're working towards a 90-minute version that will be running for 5 weeks next summer at Florida Studio Theater.
One of the wonderful things in this theater world is how things develop from a kernel of an idea to who knows what. It can, you know, and this could turn into a stage piece, you know, not floating. But speaking of floating, we should talk to Zoe again. Oh,
floating.
Well, I was just referencing the
goldenrod. The goldenrod. I will be doing 9 to 5 when I get back at a theater called Stage of St. Louis, which is in their 30th year.
Fantastic.
St. Louis, which is actually where I did It Should Have Been You last year. It was the first regional theater
same
to get the rights, same role. And I believe that's probably how Kathy found me. And then it turns out that she talked to Jeremy about me, and Jeremy is like, I know her, because he was at Stages in 2000 playing my son in State Fair. So it's kind of like a very small world in full circle. It's very exciting.
Well, I hope you'll come back to Kalamazoo.
I would love to.
Well, Rob, would you tell us how we're going to finish the hour in music here?
Oh, I thought you were going to ask me what I'm doing next. I'm going to be having lunch. And then, no, so for this final song, it's called Beautiful. The bride, Rebecca, has just come out in her wedding dress, and she looks like $1 million, and her mother's, Zoe's character, is telling her how beautiful she is.
And I'm telling her how nice
she is. Excuse me.
I never tell her she's beautiful.
Nice. And, her older sister, Jenny, never gets those kind of compliments, and, you know, they sort of hear, Jenny overhears her mother telling her how she wishes that Jenny would lose some weight and find a man, etc. And so
Zoe's
this is
trying to interrupt.
I didn't hear you right. You are absolutely right. I tell Rebecca she's beautiful. It's Jenny, unfortunately.
Yes. So obviously Jenny always feels like that her sister can do no wrong in her mother's eyes, and that, you know, Jenny's the ugly duckling. And this is sort of Jenny's response. She's alone on stage, but speaking about her mother.
Tickets are available at FarmersAlleyTheater.com, and you can follow this show and much more at Farmers Alley Theater on Facebook. Thank you, Rob. Thank you, Zoe. Thank you, DJ.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Poor Jenny, sweet Jenny, such a pretty face, but how you eat, Jenny. I swear there's not a man you couldn't date if you lose some weight. They think I'm sort of pretty, kind of sexy, almost easy on the eye. Sort of, kind of, almost, somewhat nice.